Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by awesome Patreon backers like the Chipper Chuck, the esteemed Evan Harrison Cass, and the magnificent Michelle Shepherdson. Today, we've got myself, Ange, along with Jared and Senda, and we are going to talk about dealing with the dreaded imposter syndrome in relation to role-playing games and, you know, our lives in general. Before we dive into that main topic, though, we're going to ask our Get to Know a Gnome question, which tonight is, what's a time you were supposed to run a game but had absolutely nothing planned, so had to make it all up on the fly? Jared, I'm actually going to start with you.
Not counting the nights when I was doing this on purpose, because there for a while I was alternating a more traditional system with a PBTA game so that I was keeping my improvisational skills a little bit sharper at that point in time. Now nothing sharp. It's fine. It's been... I showed up one night and I was running Edge of the Empire, which is, you know, the Star Wars, the criminal underworld type version of that system. I had nothing. I didn't know what we were going to do. And I really did not like calling off when I was running games at the game store, because people would come in from out of town. And if they got, you know, into town after they were driving a half hour and the game wasn't going on, I felt terrible about it. So unless I was actually sick, I never liked to call off. So we get in and I'm thinking, okay, what can I do to come up with anything? The nice thing is, in Edge of the Empire, you have obligations. So every character has somebody that they're in debt to or somebody that they owe a favor to. So I started the session sounding like I entirely intended for this to be the session all along. You finished up another job. Before you start a new job, does anyone want to work on lowering their obligations? This brought us to this great chain of event where, for one thing, it could have been a nightmare, but I had like six players and three different directions going on at one time because everybody went off to do their own thing to work on their obligations. So we had two people that got into a high-speed speeder chase where their speeder exploded and they fell into a back alley and the explosion was all over the Holonet. It was great. I had another the person watching the ship lost the ship.
Oh, oh no.
And they were trying to track down who stole their ship. No. Another group of people decided to go get their next job, and they ended up, you know, wandering into like Black Sun offices with the Black Sun Vigo just basically saying, "No, you are going to work for me. You have no choice." And then the whole group coming back together to assassinate that Black Sun Vigo.
Wow.
None of this was planned when I walked in there.
Amazing. Yeah.
Now I'm going to ask Senda, which I know is a loaded question.
It is a loaded question, because I think what's challenging for me is more like, when am I not? like Jared said, like when not intentionally, right? And the best that I can really do is on game nights when game might have otherwise been canceled because too many people called out, or running an unplanned one shot at a convention are maybe the times that I would have walked into it without planning at all, not without knowing I was running a game. Because, so I guess what I should say is, this happens to me when I go someplace and I didn't know that I was running a game, right? Like that's when it's like, okay, what are we doing? And the answer for me has always kind of been to pull out something that requires just the smallest amount of like push and then feeds me plot items. So I love Lasers and Feelings for this, but the last time it happened, I know that I ran my version of Lasers and Feelings, which is Love and Justice, right? And I took a couple of very kind gentlemen through being teenage magical girls, and they had a lot of fun in an amusement park. But I'm cheating, because really, I guess my answer is, if I don't know that I'm running a game that night, I have a little stable of games that I know that I can run without any idea what's happening, because they either feed me plot ideas. So like one of the whole conceits of Lasers and Feelings games, right? The whole everything based off of them is that there's like basically a Mad Libs statement that tells you what you're trying to do, right? And on top of that, I only intend to play that game for probably about 3 hours at the most. So it also works out perfectly for, oops, the GM didn't show up, right? Oops, no GM. Is like, yeah, that's usually when I run games right now. And so I don't know. I guess that's my jam. My jam is that, like, oops, showed up, didn't know I was running a game. Let me pull out one of these games that requires me, while they take 5 minutes to make characters, I take 5 minutes to write a sentence and like, all right, let's go. And I guess that's my personal solution. Yeah. How about you, Ange?
One of the things I love is if I am bringing a PBTA game to the table, I have no idea what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen in that game until people give me characters. But it amazes me how many players don't pick up on that.
Oh, that part is pretty funny. I mean, that's the best part of running PBTA.
Yeah. People will apologize. I'm so sorry I derailed your game.
Like, there weren't any rails.
we were not on a train track. We were on an airspeed glider across a frozen lake.
Yes.
And just going whichever way the wind pushed us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a good metaphor.
I did have an incident in my D&D game last year where I do plan. With my D&D games, I do prep, I do plan. I have a better idea of what's going on and... You know, and that's more because it's a campaign and I want to have a degree of continuity throughout the campaign. But I had come up with this plot hook for one of the players who was a cleric of the Silver Flame. And he was like, I'm going to check in with the Church of the Silver Flame now that we're in Stormreach. And I'm like, okay. And I'd come up with a plot hook for there. I, for some reason, did not expect my players to take that hook and instantly start investigating it. I have no idea why I was thinking this way.
This was not a today hook.
It was totally a today hook, which is why I don't know why I wasn't thinking they'll investigate this now instead of when they come back to the city. No, so there's a missing priest. We're going to investigate this now. And, like, I'm sitting here on the fly. Is there... debating what they're going to do and trying to figure out how they're going to track down this priest. And I'm like, okay, the priest is in the sewers. I have a sewer map now. And I have some cultists that have kidnapped the priest. And okay, and here's a thing, you know, some monsters for them to run into in the muck of... And like, I'm slowly planning this in the background as they're debating what they're going to do. And like, I told them all afterwards, I had no idea. I was doing that all on the fly.
I mean, it kind of sounds a little bit like... one specific game moment Andy and I still laugh about to this day, which was when I had a character in a D&D game that she was running that needed to get into a castle. It was kind of it was like a big mansion-y house castle thing, right? She had planned all sorts of different ways we could, you know, we could sneak in, we could fight our way in, we could climb the walls, we could do all this stuff, right? And I walked up to the door and I knocked on it and she was like, hang on a second, I need to think about what's going to happen. I expected this was not, why would you knock on the door? Just knocked on the door like, hi. Players doing unexpected things, which was not the question, though.
Players are always going to do unexpected things.
Yes.
But let's move on into our main topic. Recently, I ran into a situation where I doubted my ability to run a game for a certain group of friends, and I quickly realized I was dealing with imposter syndrome. So, what is imposter syndrome? We're going to borrow a page from the definition panda. Imposter syndrome is the persistent inability to believe that one's success is deserved or has been legitimately been achieved as a result of one's own effort or skills. This is something I think everyone deals with at one time or another to varying degrees, and with the pressure that can come from stepping into the role of game master or whatever title you want to give the game facilitator, it's worth having a conversation about. Let's start off with all of us baring our soul. How has imposter syndrome affected you in this hobby? Jared, I'll start with you.
So one of the big things that I have noticed is if I have forward momentum, I am a lot more confident about running games. If I start missing sessions that I have scheduled it gives me time to start thinking. And the longer I go between games and running things, the more I start wondering if I was ever a good GM ever. And if, you know, people were just putting up with this because, you know, maybe we'll finally get back to this after a month and a half and everybody will realize that they were having too much fun doing whatever they were doing that wasn't the game. So, I mean, that's a thing that, you know, kind of stalks me and whispers in my ear.
What about you, Senda?
This is big feels, right? Okay. This is interesting to me because I think that a lot of the reason that it took me a very long time to understand that I could run games and not just play them was because of imposter syndrome, right? Yeah, right. So, I mean, I spent probably the first at least 10 years that I was really into role-playing games, right? Like, obsessively into them. And I tried to run one or two games. It was D&D 3.5 at the time. And that was the only game I had ever played at the time also. It took me a long time to play anything else. So I had a couple of attempts, right? I had an attempt, and then I waited like another 3 or 4 years because it didn't go well. And then I had another attempt, and it also failed horribly. And it took me... So I was basically just convinced that I couldn't run games, that I wasn't good at it, and that it wasn't for me, and I was just a forever player. So I think that's really what the imposter syndrome did for me. And it took me a long time, and learning about other styles, both of game writing, game design, and game running, and game playing, to understand that the facilitation of a minutely planned and prepped game doesn't work for my brain, and that that doesn't mean that I can't run games effectively and very successfully, right? But yeah, that was definitely a thing for sure for me. Yeah, what do you think, Ange? What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I had the I played for 15 years before I ran, and I fully committedly believed that I could not possibly run games.
Yeah, exactly that. Yep.
It wasn't until I met my friend TJ, who was not going to put up with that BS. He's like, you're a good player. You'd make a good GM. When are you going to run a game? And it was like, there was no, you know, are you going to run a game? It was when are you going to run a game? And he like very gently but firmly pushed me into running a game. More recently, I had the issue of did you guys know that I'm kind of social?
What?
That I know a lot of people?
Shocking.
I sometimes am still very shocked at this, but I have a group of friends that I primarily play with, and recently we generally only play once a month or, you know, once every few months. We always get together at Origins and play in person, and I love these players. These are some of my absolute favorite people in the world to play with because it's the exact mix of role playing and system enjoyment that I have. So it's like it's a perfect mesh for me. And we recently had to end the game we were playing. We'd finished the storyline, so the GM said, like, yeah, I'm too busy to keep running. Would somebody else be interested in stepping up and running? And I'm like, oh no, I can't lose my group. I can't lose this group. Mm-hmm. We need to have a game. We need to have a game. But I'm like, I can't possibly run for these people. Me, who writes for Gnome Stew, who runs at conventions, yeah. Who, you know, like,
come on.
And I'm sitting here thinking, I can't run for these people. And thankfully, an idea planted itself in my head and would not let go. And for 2 days, I kept dreaming about this campaign idea. So I finally pitched it to them, and they're all like, yeah, that sounds fun. Let's do it, Ange. And I'm like, oh, God. So I am going to be running a campaign for these folks starting next month, and we'll play in person at Origins, and then we'll see where it goes from there. But it was still just like, it was some serious imposter syndrome doing some, you know, boot stomps on my brain leading up to that, because it's like you have these people in your life that you enjoy, you respect, and like suddenly if you're in the position of facilitating a game for them, it changes the dynamic. That can be a lot.
Yeah, well, you suddenly feel much more like you're taking more of the responsibility for everyone's fun, right? And they're like, I don't know, will I be as good at it as the person who was doing it before?
It's the other thing that was kind of funny when you were talking about this and the imposter syndrome and even having that with people that you have played with before. Phil and Senda were just recently on Pandas Talking Games talking about like IP and using that in in role-playing games. Not that long ago, I ran that game of the One Ring for all of you, and I've run it, and it was all people that I've run games for before, but because it was Tolkien, I was really scared that I was going, this is not going to feel right, they're going to play this, and they're going to think, that was a generic fantasy, I don't care. And what's really funny about that is the thing that actually helped me with that is, here's a thing that everybody out there that likes Tolkien should keep in mind, it's all unreliable narrators. That's according to Tolkien. Like, it's all unreliable narrators. The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings was Bilbo, Frodo, and Sam writing what they experienced. It's not handed down from the gods telling you this is exactly what happened. It's a bunch of hobbits remembering what happened.
Although you did literally touch on, and I guess this drips into the next question. There are things that I don't run because they're a little bit too anxiety ridden like that for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And IPs with a super deep wealth of knowledge tend to fall squarely into that category and are probably the really honestly the only thing I can think of right now that imposter syndrome would stop me from doing in gaming. But it's definitely like I wouldn't run Lord of the Rings. I probably wouldn't run Star Wars either. I play Star Wars. I pretty much don't run in well-known IPs because I'm always anxious about remembering everything and knowing it as well as the other people at my table. Because even when I'm obsessed with something, I can't remember all the details. That's not how my brain works. Oh my gosh.
I have to confess, I wouldn't have played that One Ring game if it wasn't Jared running and if I didn't know the other players.
Yeah.
Because I have also, like, I tend to avoid games that have a deep lore that I am not super familiar with. For example, Star Trek.
Yeah.
I love the Modiphius Star Trek game. It's awesome. But I have not invested any time in trying to figure out if I could run it, because I don't feel like I know the Star Trek universe well enough to give people the game they're expecting.
Right. And I know that when someday I finally play Star Trek, because I also will not run Star Trek, right? Like, I spent 2 years of the pandemic getting schooled up by Phil on what he felt that I needed to know to be able to play in that game. And don't get me wrong, I really enjoyed it. And the end result is that now I'm a Trekkie, because if you are not a Trekkie and you are an adult and you live in this day and age, then you, unless you have someone to like take your hand and like guide you through it, it's really hard to become a Trekkie because it's like an overwhelming quantity of media, right? So yeah. I'm very grateful for it. I really enjoyed every minute of it. But, like, I could never run a game. Okay. And it's funny that I say that, right? Even as I'm sitting here, because I've just told you, not even 10 minutes ago, that Lasers and Feelings is one of my go-to games, right? Which is entirely based on tropes of Star Trek.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's not Star Trek, right?
I think there is a difference between playing with the tropes of an IP compared to playing with the IP.
The actuality.
Because I will run a lot of space opera games that take influence from Firefly, Mass Effect, Star Trek, Star Wars, you know, like mash it all together. And like people will be able to recognize individual parts from these things, but it's not one whole totality. So it's like I'm safe in that if I miss a thing,
right,
no one's gonna call me on it, because
it was never supposed to be there to begin with, right? Like,
exactly.
If you missed it, you can't forget a thing. It's your universe. You made it. It is whatever you say it is. Yeah.
So the next question was going to be that we kind of veered into.
I know I dragged us over.
It's like, has imposter syndrome ever stopped you completely from doing something you were otherwise interested in? Jared, have you had one of these?
Oh, yeah, definitely. This is, you know, I'm going to go into a little bit of me here, but I have anxiety issues and I have, you know, issues with not being a neurotypical person. And if I read anyone in the group as being unhappy with something and it didn't get elaborated well, I often would come up with an excuse to end the campaign because I would feel like this is devastating. They said they didn't like something. And the funny thing was, sometimes it was, I'm not getting along with this other player. I'm not getting along with, you know, I just don't like how this is going, but I still like the game in general. But because I wasn't getting the full picture of it, but I was getting enough to know they were unhappy, I would just be devastated. And I would, and what I would usually do, and this is sad, but this is also a kind of a defensive mechanism, I wouldn't say, I'm afraid you guys aren't happy, so I'm going to quit running. I would say something like, I'm getting really busy, I can't do this anymore, or I'm just completely out of ideas, I'm really sorry, everybody. Because I could not, you know, brook that, that divide to say, okay, what is wrong? Like, how can we fix this? Because I was almost afraid they would tell me. because I'm always thinking, and this goes back to the imposter syndrome thing, I'm always thinking that if people enjoyed my campaigns, it was a complete accident and I had nothing to do with it.
This veers slightly into a sensitive area of this topic, because I believe everybody experiences imposter syndrome to one way or another, but people who are neurodivergent tend to experience it on a different level or a slightly different way that can be, I mean, it's always difficult to combat imposter syndrome, no matter what, whether you're neurotypical or not. So I'm curious what your thoughts on this are. Senda?
Yeah, I think it actually veers off into things that have other names, right? Like, because we get to talk about things like just anxiety, right? Like, if you have anxiety from whatever cause, you probably also experience imposter syndrome because it's a very specialized form of anxiety, right? On top of that, and something that I know that I experience is rejection sensitivity, which does cause really elevated reactions to a perception that you may have done something wrong or that someone is in some way rejecting you or maybe not having fun at your table, right?
Yeah, like what just
like what Jared was literally saying, right? And sometimes that is very intense for me in a way that I don't know if everyone on this planet is experiencing it. And it has absolutely caused me to react sometimes in situations in ways that were probably more destructive because I have a strong urge to immediately fix the problem somehow, right? It's not always problems that are immediately fixable. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's problems where I need to shut up and hear the answer. But like I have, you know, this like monster sitting on me that's like, oh my God, we're gonna die if we don't fix it right now. But like, you can't fix other people's perception of you or, you know, their emotions, or if something did go wrong, you can't necessarily just like grovel and make it go away, right? That's what I would say about it. I would say that neurodivergency in its many and varied forms tends to come hand in hand with things that are related to anxiety. And what we're really talking about in imposter syndrome is the specific flavor, cherry flavor anxiety. And like, if you already have strawberry flavor too, then like, it's probably more flavor all around. I don't know.
Yeah, I think imposter syndrome tends to be more associated with anxiety related to quote-unquote professional settings, you know, academic, professional. And honestly, you know, while I never, like, running games, you don't need to be a professional. You don't need to be a professional for this. But you are still taking the fun of the other people at the table as your responsibility, which can create some of those same pathways.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I get imposter syndrome all over the place. Like, in other situations too, although I do think it's accurate to think of it in sort of a professional sense.
The funny thing is, and I'm going to, bring in, therapist time here, but one of the things that has been told to me about anxiety is be kind to yourself. Take a minute and think, there's no reason to get upset with yourself or to think less of yourself because everything isn't perfect.
Yeah. I think one of the hardest things to do is remember to take that space and take that breath. And I think it's something I've been working on for years, right? I'm getting better at it in a lot of situations. I don't know how you feel, Jared. The fact that you can see here and say it implies to me that you are also getting better at it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But like, boy, when you hit one of those situations that you don't have experience in, where you haven't had to engage some of your coping mechanisms before and it catches you by surprise, those are the ones that still can just knock me over and I don't realize it until I'm so far in that instead of being able to do some of the gentler surface level coping mechanisms that I can usually use to just be like, whoop, back that out. I'm like, oh no, how are we already halfway down this hole? Now we have to take drastic measures. How did I not catch this? Right.
So has there ever been a kind of a revelatory moment that made you realize that maybe this is in your head, that you are pretty good at running games, that you are pretty good at being a GM, Jared?
Yes, some of which I promptly forget the next time I have imposter syndrome. However, every so often it is nice. And I think the problem is too, sometimes when you get to be good friends with some of the people that you are playing games with, like what happened when I had a regular group that was showing up at the local game store, they don't necessarily always stop and tell you it was really cool when you did this, or I really enjoyed that. So you're not hearing all of that. And if you're not hearing that and anything else just makes you think that something didn't go right, it's really easy to fall into that imposter syndrome thing where you're thinking like, I am not doing right by this entire group. And what's really interesting is every so often I would have a third party person, at the game store say, oh man, so-and-so really loves your game. They were just raving about how you did this the other night. And I'm like, they never told me that. That's amazing. I'm really glad they enjoyed it. Like I said, it's an ongoing thing though. It's not one time I suddenly realize, hey, I'm actually good at this. It's, I think I'm kind of good at it for a while. And then it creeps up on me again.
I had a moment where I had a friend from out of town staying with me for a local game convention. And this friend was somebody who had literal fanboys that would follow him to conventions to play in his games. He had fanboys. He was staying with me and we're getting ready to leave the house and we walk out to the car and he's like, oh, my nerves. And I look at him and I'm like, what? Why are you having nerves? He's like, I always have nerves before a convention. I've got to be running. And I'm like, but Brandon, they love you. They travel hours to come play your game.
That would give me more nerves.
Yeah.
The pressure.
It struck me that here is this person that I have envisioned as an accomplished, competent, confident game master. And he's even feeling the imposter syndrome and the nervous and the anxiety and all of that.
So what I did is I went out and made a podcast. And that sounds really silly, right? Like it's weird. But I went and I made a podcast where I ran so many games. And that entire time I was like, well, I don't know. I'm doing this show where I'm talking about GMing advice and I'm also doing an actual play where I run and play games and I don't know, I guess I'm an okay-ish GM. And then people would leave reviews, right? On the podcast, or people would say things on Twitter when it was still Twitter. It was amazing. the most amazing thing to me was, and you know, I mean, She's a Super Geek has been offline now for, well, 3 or 4 years now, so not anymore, but while it was on the air, when it was pretty solid and had been going for a while, there were several instances where people literally told me, that my show had inspired their shows, right? Like that my podcast had inspired them to go do podcasts. That was wild because I was still like, well, I think I'm okay at GMing, right? I just write for a blog about gaming and also have all these podcasts where people actually apparently want to hear my opinions. I guess so. Every time something like that happened, or where people, you know, listen to the show and folks would tell me, because, you know, when you're doing a show or something and it connects with someone, they will tell you. Mm. It was pretty amazing. That show was pretty life-changing for me all around.
Do you have a number, like how many games were played?
Oh my goodness.
Do you know the number?
Not off the top of my head, but I calculated it the other day and I can't remember. It was a lot. I mean, basically what I did was I mathed out that how long the show had gone for, and then about like let's do some math.
Average span of episodes,
right,
per show.
Like there's 147 episodes of the show, and if we figure that every game was about 2 episodes long on average, that would leave us with about 73 games, which is a lot of games.
That is a lot of games.
And I think that probably averages out, because some were definitely longer than 2 episodes, mm-hmm. and some were definitely shorter, right? Some were 1 episode games, quite a few of them actually. So it's somewhere in that count.
I think I was on 3. I ran Masks and you did 3 episodes of that. Mm-hmm. I think Bite Marks was 2 episodes.
Oh, I really like that game.
Yeah. And Mulgoths and Visigoths, did we just do 1 episode
for
that? Oh,
no, I don't remember. I think that might have been 2 episodes, too.
Okay.
Yeah. Mulgoths versus... I forgot about that game. See, like...
That was ridiculous.
I don't even
fun.
Remember all the games anymore. And the best part about SaskGeek was that eventually I got to just be like, come run a game for us. And then I didn't have to try to learn a new game every month, which was the best part, because you know who was stuck learning a new game every single month? James D'Amato. And it's a lot of work. That's why he's not running the One Shot Podcast anymore. He had too much on his plate. It's smart. Make someone else learn the games. And or make the people who are writing the games come and run the games for you. That was my favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. That always worked well for Saski.
Yes. It was by no means as good or as widely seen as SaskGeek, because that is a classic and you should go listen to that entire run right
now.
See,
you're making me blush again right now. I don't even know.
But one of the things that also kind of helped me, like when I was having imposter syndrome again, is I did like an actual play thing for Marvel Heroic way back when that first came out, and we just streamed it straight to YouTube. I don't know that I want anyone to watch it because it looks like crap compared to, you know, actual plays now, because this was in the early days of like, hey, we could just film ourselves and send it to YouTube. So it's terrible, but I would get comments from people saying, I didn't understand this game until I saw you running it. And yep. I would be like, wow, it just like struck me. Yeah. It's like, I am doing something that someone's getting value for.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. Right.
So what are some tools that you guys have developed to get past the anxiety and imposter syndrome brings on? Jared?
So in the notes, I wrote drugs.
I still like the answer. But it makes me think of like that TikTok sound. It's just like drugs.
Drugs. To elaborate though, mental health is an important thing. If you are having issues with anxiety, if you're having, you know, these things that are causing you problems, go to a mental health professional. I am much better now because I am on various drugs for my anxiety and ADHD and everything else, and I cope with things much better now, you know. And mm-hmm. there are things that you can just build up in your mind and start telling yourself, but sometimes you need to make everything else quiet before you can start telling you those things, and that's what you might sometimes need the pharmaceutical help for.
When your brain doesn't generate the dopamine the homemade way, store-bought is also acceptable. It still works.
And I think that it is, like, I don't think I'm neurodivergent, so I've never had to, you know, investigate getting medications to help me balance these things out. But I have had periods of time in my life where I am drowning in anxiety and stress and concern for whatever situation is going on. And I found talking to people helped, both, you know, friends who I trust, as well as a professional who is paid to listen to me talk about why I am reliving the days of my childhood getting bullied in middle school. You know, like, it's worth, you know, having these people that you can talk to about these things.
And this is another thing that Phil and Senda have talked about on Panda's Talking Games, but
you're just a walking advertisement for my shows tonight, and I love every minute of it. Please keep going.
But, like, you know, one of the things that is actually a tool that can help with imposter syndrome and anxiety and everything is when they talk about how you should prep enough to make yourself feel comfortable. That is actually a tool.
Mm-hmm.
When you are relaxed more, you are less likely to have the little, you know, demons whispering in your ear that you're not good enough.
Lots of people have talked about, you know, picking the right game for your group. And we've talked about that before, too. Some of my favorite episodes that we did reasonably recently was picking the right game for your brain. As a person running a game, putting some advice and words around my personal experience and also Phil's experience where, you know, for him, it is more comfortable for him to have prepped more. And it is less comfortable for me because my main challenge in running games has to do with recall. Like, if I prepped a game, even if I prepped a game, let alone someone else prepping, but if I prepped a game and I prepped it yesterday, I'm going to spend most of the time that I'm running that game worried I'm forgetting something instead of just actually having fun and enjoying the game. So part of it to me is a conversation about what games play to your strengths so that you don't have to spend time being anxious about, am I doing well enough in the areas that I'm weakest at, right? Like, and that's literally what I do now, right? Like, I play games that play to my strengths as a game master. And this other piece of advice I know for sure is not one that will work for everybody. So, like, absolutely take this with a grain of salt and apply it in your life as is appropriate and safe and good for you, which is the thing that I've learned is that sometimes there's a flavor of fear that is telling you this thing is unsafe. Maybe don't do it. Maybe just don't do that. It's not safe. Get away from it, right? And then there is a flavor of fear that is, I am scared I am going to fail if I try this thing, and therefore I don't want to try it because my fear of failure or rejection sensitivity, for example, is trying to protect me by making me just not do it at all. Those two feelings can be very similar and sometimes very difficult to define which one is which. But whenever I have turned towards that fear of failure and done the thing instead, even though it was very anxiety inducing, certainly at the beginning, it has always actually worked out for me. And the best way that I then know to kind of work through that is to just keep doing it until it is less anxiety inducing. Mm-hmm. Like running games. I don't know. I'm anxious about running games. Maybe I should record them and put them out there for the entire world to listen to. That seems to work. And now my day job is basically being game master for a bunch of developers, right? But I still get anxious about running like a Scrum event because I'm like, oh man, what if I don't do well running this retrospective? And it's exactly like sitting down at a freaking game table and running a game. Now it's just my day job.
I think there's two other things I would suggest. One is run for your friends, run for your people you trust to start with. Because if these are people that you care about, that care about you, then you can get the feedback you need without feeling like you're putting yourself in danger with strangers who might be offended that you weren't as good as you thought. They're probably not going to be as offended as that. Those stories happen, but they're rarer than you think. The other thing is get yourself a mentor. get yourself a GM mentor, somebody you can talk to about your concerns, about your worries about a game, the things you want to try and do at the table, that type of thing.
The other thing that I actually think is a really important tool, and I don't always remember to do this, even though I think this is an important tool, is Stars and Wishes is a really good way to make sure you are getting feedback that is actually playing into, you know, knowing how the game really actually went. And I'm just going to say this too. Years back, when people were talking about some of those feedback tools, there was a lot of emphasis on, well, you need to, you know, like roses and thorns. We want to find out what didn't go well. And my experience is if somebody has something that really didn't go well, often they will tell you. But if you're asking people, sometimes they feel obligated. And if you're the type of person that has anxiety or imposter syndrome, that's going to hit you a lot harder.
Yeah.
Then, you know, if you're just asking, what do you want to see and what were you happy about?
I think Stars and Wishes is much better because stars are the things you enjoyed about the game and wishes are things you want to see happen in the future.
I think it's a much gentler version of Roses and Thorns, right? Which I also like because I think that it is easier to hear things that people wish for in the future. And it means they can frame requests as future asks instead of as in, like, you screwed this up tonight.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I was going to actually add, and this is just a thing that I'm kind of always saying, which is about communication and is related to what Andrew was saying. And this is, I had this thought and then I lost it by the time she finished her thought. We often think as a GM, like, we're supposed to be all put together and you're not supposed to show your nerves and you're not, you know, all of that, right? Like you're supposed to go put on a show for your table. And in my experience, I have very honestly just said to people, you know, right? Like, oh my gosh, I'm actually a little bit nervous to run this game. So bear with me. I think it's going to go okay. But like, like, you know, that's where I am right now or something like that. And the thing I think that we don't always think about is that as a GM, it's okay for you to be a person too, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
And I really do believe that the GM at the table is one of the players and should be getting,
yes,
you know, joy and happiness from the act of running a game and collaborating, right? You're not just there as a trained monkey to dance or perform. And so because of that, like in the same way that you would treat all of your players as people, you should expect that same kindness and understanding for yourself. And since we're talking about imposter syndrome, of course, that's really difficult, right? But it's a thing that I will say as someone who's gone through a lot of that. I'm just going to give all of the people listening right now, if you have any trouble with that, permission to be human as a GM or a facilitator and to have feelings physically, emotionally, whatever, and communicate that to your table and just expectation set, right? It's okay.
We always say that, you know, like as a GM, you're taking on the responsibility of making sure everyone at the table is having fun, enjoying the game. You are also one of those people at the table.
It is your responsibility also to make sure that you are also doing right by yourself.
Yes. Be kind to yourself. Yeah. I think that covers everything we need to cover for this right now.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah. We have solved imposter syndrome.
Maybe. You know, okay. I was leaving. Here's my best imposter syndrome story. I will tell you this and then we will wrap, right? I was leaving Metatopia, having taken two games, I think, that year that I had, one of which I had largely written and one of which, you know, Phil and I co-wrote Turning Point. And it had been pretty well received. And I'm very, very proud of that game. And I'm leaving Metatopia. And Avanel, who runs Metatopia, it's like, you know, we're chatting with her as we're walking out the door. And she's like, how did it go? And I'm like, I'm really intimidated by some of these really big game design names. And she looked me in the face. And Jared, I apologize, but I'm going to say this anyway. She looked me in the face and she said, my wish for you is that you will have the confidence of a mediocre white man because you deserve it. And that was the end of my Metatopia. And every time I start getting imposter syndrome in the game space, I flash back to this moment where Avi like looked me dead in the eyes and said these words to me. And I was like, right, just do it, right? Like at least pretend that you have that confidence, even if you don't feel it. Anyway, that's my parting thought. Not to imply that you are mediocre, Jared.
That'd be a step up from what I usually assume.
I don't think that you are mediocre.
He's honestly one of my favorite GMs.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
He always plays it down, but he is one of my favorite GMs. There is a reason I am always available for the games he runs on Thursday night. This show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can be a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. We love doing this, and our patrons help us keep it going. The Gnomecast is part of the Polygamers Podcast Network, so if you're enjoying us, here's another show to check out.
On Misdirected Mark Plays, Phil, Chris, Bob, and Jerry play and discuss a campaign that they created and that they are now playing. So you actually get to listen to them put their money where their mouth is. And it's really good because I'm obsessed with it right now because they are playing Children of the Shroud. And if you're not listening to it, you really should be. Because we're in the final moments, but you have to go back to the beginning. But we're in the final moments. Anyway, you can catch them on MM Plays and it drops every Tuesday.
You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, along with Gnome Stew on Facebook, Blue Sky, Instagram, and Meta. Gnomes, is there anything else you'd like to give a shout out to today?
Okay, so I know I am playing with fire here, because we always talk about this when we talk about Kickstarters, but it just started today when we're recording. You should have about a week left to back this by the time this shows up in your pod feeds. Evil Hat is crowdfunding Stew Pot, Tales from a Fantasy Tavern. And what it is it's a bunch of small interconnected games that tell the story of a bunch of adventurers in a fantasy world that have retired and are starting to run a tavern. And I love this. I really want to see this. And also, it's a Stew Pot, so I have to mention it on Gnome Stew.
You do. It's a contractual obligation, actually.
Sunder, is there anything you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, this is past, and that's okay, but I'm going to call it out anyway because it will happen again in 2025 and you should keep your eye out for it. The Trans Rights Readathon just wrapped up last month. It's a very cool readathon where you pledge to read books and people pledge money, and then you read books that are by and or contain authors who are trans, two-spirit, genderqueer, gender fluid, non-binary, etc. I read a lot of really fantastic books, and I'm still like quivering with some of them because they were just really good, and I had to like take a little break because I binged five books in like 7 days. But anyway, you should keep your eyes out for that in 2025. It's something that I will definitely be screaming about again, and it's really, really neat.
Very cool. I figured I should just mention the conventions I'm planning on attending this year. Origins is going to be happening from June 19th through the 23rd. Event registration should already be live by the time you're hearing this. I am also planning on getting to Gamehole Con in Madison, Wisconsin in October from the 17th to the 20th. And last but absolutely not least, I will be in Michigan for UConn in November from the 15th through the 17th. And we'll have links in the show notes for all of these things. So do you guys think this episode was good enough to keep us out of the stew, or are we not worthy?
I'm not really sure.
Let me center myself with my breathing app before we start looking into the stew pot.
My Finch says that she thinks I'm doing great.